Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Chaf Hey Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. By the two dots, Pekaka Halayin, yeah. Eight lines, rather, yeah. Yeah, by the two dots, Pekaka Halayin, yeah. Okay. We learned in the Mishnah a machloikas about a pekaka haloin, which is a thing that you use, like a window shade that you use to close up the window. We're not just talking about where you pull it down over the window like you do nowadays. We're talking about the a window in those days generally meant an open hole in the wall, and you have this thing, you have a wooden board or something that you use to close up the hole. Well, sort of like the shutters they have in Israel now. I mean, the difference is those shutters are permanently attached to the wall. There's no question. You can open and close those on Shabbos. Here we're dealing with something which is not actually... So the question is, how attached does it have to be? The question... Rashi learns that the question basically is not so much as far as mukta, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer. The question is rather as far as the matter of boina. That the problem is, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara, actually, the problem, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it said in the Mishnah, that the only way you're allowed to use it on Shabbos is only if it's tied to the windowsill, or whatever, somehow, you know, to the wall, as well as hanging off the ground. It's not actually sitting on the board, the rope that the board is attached to is short enough that it doesn't go all the way down to the ground. So only then would it be, only then would we say that when you're taking it and using it to close the window, it doesn't look like binyan. But if it's not tied at all, so it's just sitting on the floor, or even if it's tied, but the rope is long enough to go all the way down to the ground, then it looks like you're taking something off the ground and building with it, and that would be usur. So whereas the Chachamim say it's allowed, and we're going to deal with in the Gemara what exactly do the Chachamim say, what does or doesn't need to be done with it to be able to use it. So that was the case with it. Pekaka halon chola. No, it doesn't matter. If you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to, regardless. But so we're saying, again, Rabbi Eliezer would say, if you want to use it, you can use it, fine, but it needs to be tied with a rope to the wall, and that rope needs to be short enough that it's not hanging down all the way to the ground. That's hanging there in the air. When you're not using it, then you would be allowed to pick it up and use it to close the window. If not, then not. Yeah. Nowadays, we have glass. In those days, a window meant just an open hole in the wall. Yeah. Yeah. No windows, no glass. Yeah. Okay, so Omer Rabba Baba Chana Omer Rabbi Yechanan. Hakom Moedim She'en Oysen Oyal Arai B'tchila B'yamtiv. Both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim agree that you're not allowed to make it, that you're not allowed to start by making even a temporary tent on Yamtiv Ve'en Tzarech Loimer B'Shabbos, needless to say on Shabbos. So meaning, in other words, Rashi gives an example. Let's say you let right now in our Mishnah we were talking actually about putting up in a window in a window blind or whatever which goes on the side of the wall. But let's say, for example, you had Rashi says, let's say you had four poles stuck in the ground and you wanted to spread a canopy over them on Shabbos. So it's not meant to be a permanent oil. You're just doing it temporarily. But everybody would agree you can't do that on Yom Tov even on Shabbos. The loy nechlku. The machloka says, when you have an oil arai, are you allowed to add anything to it? In other words, if you have, let's say, so it was partially spread out, are you allowed to spread out more of it? No, just having the sticks is not partially done. The oil, so okay, Rashi over here defines that an oil for this purpose means a roof. When we're talking about something, when we're talking about mechitzas on the side, then that's something else. Rashi actually learns that you would be allowed to put up mechitzas on Shabbos where you need them, for example, for tznius. Or whatever. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on that and say that no, mechitzas as well. It depends why you're putting up the mechitzas. Sometimes they're allowed on Shabbos and sometimes not. But in any case, of course, when we're talking about a roof, then there's no question. If all you have up is the sticks, you can't spread out a blanket or whatever on top of them. The machloikas is, we're saying over here, if it's partially up, if it's partially spread out before Shabbos, so the cloth or whatever was partially was spread out, at least a tefach, are you allowed to add to it? So Rabbi Eliezer is still saying you can't add to it on Yom Tov, needless to say on Shabbos. For Chum, the Chum say you're allowed to on Shabbos, and not on Yom Tov. So applying that to our case over here, this is an so now the problem is in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, the problem is that it's a binyan kavua. It looks like a binyan kavua because, after all, you're not just talking about a temporary tent made out of blankets spread over poles or whatever. We're talking about something that you're putting into the wall of the house to put up there as a thing to cover the window. So it looks like adding to the binyan. So Rabbi Eliezer is not going to allow you it unless it's kosher v'toler, unless it's, as we said, it's tied and hanging, and the chum will. Because if it's touching the ground, then it looks like it's you're taking something off the ground and using it to build into the house. You actually have two different gersois in Rashi over here. One is the way we have it in front of us in Rashi over here is that it's a binyan kavua. The Marshal, on the other hand, has a girsa that explains that the window we're talking about in our Mishnah and our Gemara over here is actually not a window in the side of the house, but rather a skylight in the roof. And therefore, you have more of an issue because, again, if you're not allowed to do an oil, if you're not allowed to do an oil arai or to add to an oil arai, according to Rabbi Eliezer, then the same thing, you wouldn't be able to add this thing to the skylight. Because it would look unlike, again, unless it's kosher v'toloi, in which case it's clearly not something that looks like building. The halacha, by the way, is like a chachamim. So, for example, when you have, let's say, a canopy over a baby stroller, if it's partially open before Shabbos, at least a tefach, then you are allowed to open it the rest of the way. We're actually going to talk about that concept later on in the 20th perek, the shlok on a sukkah would be another example. Now, one thing it does stress in Shulchan Aruch for that purpose is the tefach does not include the fact that, like this, when you open up the thing, for example, it's bunched up to the side. That itself is more than a tefach, but that's not the oil we're talking about. We're talking about that's extended out of that at least one tefach. We said the chum said either way you're allowed to close the window with it on Shabbos. So my ben kach or ben kach, when we say ben kach or ben kach, whether this way or whether this way, what do they mean by that? If they just meant that it doesn't need to be either kosher or toleri, that it's okay if it's just sitting on the ground, then the expression instead of ben kach or ben kach, they would have just said poikin boy. What? Yeah, Yaakov, we're holding at the bottom of Kuf Chaf Hayam Beis. So my ben kach or ben kach, which implies that the Chachamim do require there to be something with this pekaka haloin, with this board that you're using to close the window. They're just saying it doesn't necessarily have to be kosher v'toler. It doesn't necessarily have to be tied and hanging like Rabbi Eliezer says. So Amar of Kahana, ben kosher, ben she'ene kosher. It means you're allowed to use it whether it's tied or whether it's not tied. In other words, according to the Chachamim, it doesn't need to be tied at all. It can just be sitting there on the ground as a piece of wood, and you're allowed to use it. V'hush mesukan, as long as it was set aside for the purpose. As long as it was set aside for the purpose before Shabbos, Rashi says it doesn't even, not Rashi, Tosfos says it doesn't even need to be necessarily that you do a maisa to it. It could be enough just to be that you had a machshava before Shabbos, that you planned to use this to close up the window. Yeah. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiya. So Rabbi Yirmiya says to Rabbi Abba, so you're taking it for granted, in other words, that the Chachamim are very makel. That they're saying, not only, we said, Rabbi Eliezer had mentioned two things. It needs to be kosher, it needs to be tied, and toleri, and the rope has to be short enough that the thing doesn't reach the ground. Why are you assuming that the Chachamim are makel on both of those and saying you don't need either of those? Rather, maybe you should say that it means whether it's hanging or whether it's not hanging. But both of them would agree it does have to be tied. So according to the Chacham, you can't just pick it up off the ground and use it. But the Chacham would agree once it's tied, even if the rope is so long that it reaches down to the ground, no big deal. It's tied someplace to the wall. So you have, here's the wall. You have a window in the wall, and above the window, let's say, or below the window, or whatever, you have a nail sticking out of the wall, and you have a rope attached. One end of a rope is attached to that. What? No, the rope holds the piece, this cover, this pekaka chaloin, which eventually you're going to be taking and using to close the window. Yeah. To cover the window. Yeah. Or just so the cold air shouldn't come in, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So why don't you assume that they do need, that they do require it to be tied to the wall, so it's not just looking like a
Alexander. Could such a device would be macabre tumor? In other words, the rope is attached to a long piece of wood that could be on the floor. Would that be able to macabre tumor?
Would it be able to be macabre tumor? I don't know. I mean, we're not dealing with being macabre tumor over here.
I understand.
But to answer the question, I mean, the board itself is a flat wooden board. But Pashtus, it's not macabre tumor because it's not a clay kibble. Wood has to be a clay kibble in order to be macabre tumor. So I would guess that probably not, but I don't know. All the more so over here, I guess it's tied to the wall, so all the more so it might be considered bottle to the wall, and the wall is not macabre tumor, as we said yesterday. All right. Anyway. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, why should we assume that even the Chachamim in our Mishnah require it to be tied? Because the same machloikas that you have over here, you have about a door bolt that drags on the ground. So we talked about a door bolt yesterday, but here we're talking about maybe it could be the same thing, or it could be a little bit different, where you're taking it and you're sticking it. It's like one of those vertical bolts, like you have nowadays on doors. Sometimes you have a bolt at the top of the door or the bottom that goes into, here we're talking about one at the bottom that goes into a hole in the threshold of the door. So near the bottom of the door, you have one of those things. Nowadays, you have them permanently attached to the door, and you take it out of the things that keep it in place, and you stick it into a hole in the ground. But in those times, they didn't have that; it wouldn't be permanently attached to the door. So you could have sometimes where it drags on the ground. So it's tied to the door, but one end of it drags on the ground. It's none. We learn in a Mishnah at the end of Erevin, Neger Hanigra, a bolt like that that drags on the ground, Nolan Boiba Mikdash of Aloiba Medina, you're allowed to lock a door with it in the Bis Mikdash, but not outside the Bis Mikdash. Whereas if it's lying on the ground, then in both cases it's also even in the Bis Mikdash. So Rashi learns that what it is like this. If it's tied to the door, then it shows that it's not a thing of binyan. It shows the fact that it's tied shows that it was already part of this binyan before Shabbos. So it's only also dirabbanan. And in general, most of the time we don't impose dinim dirabbanan in the Bis Mikdash. Therefore it will be mutter to use that. But if it's not tied, if it's just lying on the ground, then you have to pick it up from the ground and stick it and put it on the door and stick it into the hole. Then Rashi learns it would actually be bona d'oraisa, and of course if it's d'oraisa, then it's also in the Bis Mikdash as well. Tosfos learns that not. That we're talking about even if it's not attached to the door at all, it's only an issur d'rabbanan. In fact, Tosfos learns over here, the issue over here is not really boina at all. The issue over here with this negra and nigra, and also with the pekaka halon, is really more a matter of mukta. So if it's not attached to the door at all, then we're going to say that it's mukta because you haven't shown before Shabbos that you're using it as a keli. So therefore, even in the Bais Mikdash, we're going to not allow it if it's not tied at all. Okay, it's only dirabbanan, fine. Sometimes we do impose dirabbanans in the Bais Mikdash as well. We had that the other day, for example, when it came to the sticks that they used for hanging the Korban Pesach. Sometimes, especially with the dinim of mukta, the Chum do impose certain ones of them in the Bais Mikdash. Whereas if it's tied to the door, then it shows that you meant it for that purpose. So therefore you're allowed to use it in the Bais Mikdash, but still not in the Medina unless it's actually hanging off the ground. And the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Ezehu Negra Nigra Shinolin Boba Mikdash. What is this Negra Nigra that you're allowed to lock within the Bais Mikdash, Avaloba Medina, but not anywhere else? If it's tied and it's hanging, but one end of it reaches the ground. So the rope is not long enough for the whole thing to be lying on the ground, but one end of the bolt lies on the ground and the other one is hanging in the air attached to the rope. So that would be the kind that you're not allowed to use in the Medina, But if it was completely hanging off the ground, then you would be allowed to. That's according to Rabbi Eliezer. So that's the same as Rabbi. So the Mishnah and the Braisa don't specify that this is only according to Rabbi Eliezer. But we're going to see as we go through the sugya over here that that's what it is. That this is according to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, same in our Mishnah. So in our Mishnah, when it comes to the pkaka haloin, same idea. If it's completely hanging off the ground, no end of it is touching the ground, then Rabbi Eliezer will allow you to use it to close the door. But if one end of it is not, then he'll say, like he says with the bolt, only in the Beis Mikdash, not outside it. What? According to, well, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Rabbi Yehuda, which is the Chachamim of our Mishnah over here, says, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, no, as a matter of fact, if only one end of it is on the ground, then even in the Medina, even outside the Beis Mikdash, that would be mutter. What is the kind that's also outside the Beis Mikdash? If it's not tied, it's not hanging. And then when you finish using it, when you take it out to unlock the door, you take it out and you put it in a corner, so it's not attached to the door at all. Who is the Tana who says the first opinion over here, that if it's partially dragging on the ground, meaning, as we said, one end of it is on the ground and one end is not, then Rabbi Eliezer would allow it in the Beis Mikdash, but not in the Medina. So therefore, in this Mishnah and in this Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua have the same argument as Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda have the same argument as Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in our Mishnah. And we see that Rabbi Eliezer is not allowing you to use the neger unless both ends of it are off the ground. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if you completely take it off the door, then if it's not at all attached to the door, not even with a rope, then you're not allowed to use it in the Medina. But if it's attached with a rope, then you are. So therefore, getting back to, so Rabbi Yirmiyah is asking Rabbi Abba, in our Mishnah, therefore, you're telling me the Chachamim, who is the same as Rabbi Yehuda over there, is allowing you to use the Pekaka Haloin even if it's not attached to the wall at all, even if it's a completely separate piece of wood. Why? Based on what we're saying, it should be like the Negra and Negra. If it's completely detached, then Rabbi Yehuda will agree you can't use it. And only if it's tied, and fine, it's tied and part of it drags on the ground, then Rabbi Yehuda will be allowing you to use it. Amalei, so Rabbi Abba answers, Anoda Amri ki hai Tana. Yes, you're right, but I'm actually going according to a different Tana. Because you're right, you have a Mishnah and a Braisa in your favor that explains the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda that way, that we're talking about whether it's tied or not. We're talking about when it's tied, whether it drags on the ground or not, whether you're allowed to use it. But if it's not tied, everybody would agree you can't. But the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Kona she'skine balabayis lias peseach v'noyoboy, a stick that a balabayis designated to use for opening and closing the door. Tosfos learns over here that we're talking about that you use it as sort of like a key. You're not actually using, unlike before where we were talking about where you're using the bolt itself to keep the door closed, here it's more you're using it as a key to turn the lock. On the other hand, the Magen Avraham says that actually we might be talking about something over here similar to the bolt. You're using it, you're sticking it into a hole in the wall next to the door, and therefore you're using it to keep the door closed. So Bizman Shekosher V'Toli V'Pesach. So the Braisa says, if it's tied to the door and it's hanging, so it doesn't go all the way down to the ground, Peseach V'Noilboy, then you're allowed to open and close the door with it. Ein Kosher V'Toli, Ein Peseach V'Noilboy. But if it's not tied and hanging, then you're not allowed to. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a Masukah, not Peshane Kosher. And Reb Shimon Gamliel says, you're allowed to use it, even if it's only Masukah, and even if it's only designated for the purpose, even if it's not tied. And Amar of Yehuda Bar, so Rabbi Abba is saying, so you see, you have a third opinion. You have, so far we had Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Eliezer says it has to be tied and completely hanging off the ground. In the case of the Neger, for example, if even one end of it is still on the ground, then you're not allowed to use it anywhere outside the Beis Mikdash. We have Rabbi Yehuda saying that as long as it's tied, then you are allowed to. So both of them are saying it needs to be tied. Now we have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is even more makel. and saying that even if it's not tied at all, even if it's only designated, then you're still able to use it. So he's explaining, therefore, our Mishnah, when we say v'chachamim omrim ben kach or ben kach pokin boy, so therefore the chachamim are not Rabbi Yehuda, but rather Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you're allowed to use it even if it's not tied, which is why he said at the top of the Amud that the chachamim will allow it whether it's tied or not. By the way, Tosfos mentions earlier that when we say the roshay magia la'aretz, we're saying it's tied and one end of it is reaching the ground. Tosfos points out actually even if both ends of it are on the ground, then Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to use it in the Bais Hamikdash because, or even in the Medina because it's tied. The reason why we mentioned only one end onto the ground is to tell us that Rabbi Eliezer is still not going to allow it in that case, even though only one end of it is touching the ground. Or actually the other way around, when we say that Rabbi Yehuda had said that Af Zeba Medina Mutter, even when one end is reaching the ground, if both ends are on the ground, if the rope is so long that both ends of the neger reach the ground, then we would be saying it's still mutter in the Bais Hamikdash, but it's also everywhere else. You would have to have that only one end of it is reaching the ground. Okay. Anyway, the point is that therefore again you have the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is more makel than that and allows even if it's not tied at all. Okay, so Rav Abba is saying that's the chachamim of our Mishnah. And Amar of Yehuda bar Shilas, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechon, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the halacha is like him. So therefore, you would be allowed to do it even if it's not tied at all. So the Gemara says, "Mi Amar Rav Yechon Hachi." Did Rav Yechon really say that? V'hatnan. We learn in the next Mishnah, Kol Kisuria Kalim Sheyeshlam Beis Achiza. Any coverings of Kalim that have a handle, Nitolin b'Shabbos, are allowed to be handled and moved on Shabbos. Now we're going to see in the next Mishnah and in the Gemara on it that we're talking about kalim that are attached to the ground, and v'amar of Yehuda b'Shila, amar of Asi, amar of Yechonon, v'hushi yesh toras kli alehen. This only applies if they have a function of a kalim. So in other words, the cover has a usable function on its own. So Rashi explains like this. At the beginning of the Perek, we talked about, you have, for example, we started in the first Mishnah by saying that if you have a closet or something where the door came off it, then you're allowed to move the door on Shabbos because we said we were talking about even if it came off before Shabbos, because the door itself is a keli. So we said over there that even if it came off before Shabbos, then you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. But so Rashi points out, it would have to be that door actually has a function. You can sit on it, for example. You can use it as a tray. You can use it as a tray to give a kid food on or whatever. Tosfos actually learns differently and says that a little earlier and says it doesn't even necessarily need to be that. Just the fact that it was part of a keli is enough to make it be considered a keli. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it needs to have a toras kli, and in order to be able to handle it. Meaning, in other words, so now what happens in the case of the stick that we talked about? We just said on Amud Aleph that you have a stick that you're using to lock and unlock the door. Again, according to Tosfos, you're using it as a key, and according to the Magen Avraham, you're using it as a bolt. It doesn't have a toras kli. It's not shaped or otherwise designed to be a keli. It doesn't have a handle or anything particularly. So why is he allowing you to use it? V'chitema hochanamid ikatoras kliolov. So you're going to answer that maybe the stick we're talking about does actually have toras kli. Maybe it does have the function of a keli, because Rashi says you could use it. We learned the other day. We had a Mishnah the other day that said, for example, you have a stick that you use to turn over olives to see when they're ready to be pressed. Or, for example, you could use the stick to crack nuts. So maybe. The problem with that is umi boy Rabbi Shimon Gamliel toras kli olav. Fine, but you're saying Rabbi Yechonon is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now, Rav Shimon Gamliel himself, as we're going to see, doesn't require that it has a Torah's kli. And therefore, so if Rabbi Yochanan is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it means that he would allow you to move the stick regardless whether it looks like a keli, regardless whether it has any particular function of a keli, even if there's nothing else you could use it for. So again, Rashi learns that Torah's kli means that there's something else that you could use it for. So like, for example, this Kana, hypothetically, if we said it needs Torah's kli, then it would mean in order to use it on Shabbos, it would have to have two functions. Number one, you're using it to open and close the door. And number two, you're able to use it to turn over olives or whatever. We have a pile of olives over there that are where you're getting ready, you're turning them over to see if they're ready to be pressed yet. Tosfos learns differently and says you don't necessarily need that. You don't need that it's usable for something else. Just Torah's kli olav would mean that you actually did some maisa to it to show that you're going to use it as a keli now, as opposed to just a plain stick where it's still a stick like it looked before and you just happen to be using it for a different purpose. No, we're not talking about you did it on Shabbos. We're talking about before Shabbos, you shaped the stick or did something to make it into a keli. That would be Torah's kli olav. Anyway, so again, getting back to the Gemara, the question is like this. On the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan is telling us the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And as we're going to see, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel does not require something to have Torah's kli. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's enough that you thought about something before Shabbos that you plan to use it on Shabbos. Even if you didn't do any particular maisa to it. Or even if, like Rashi says, it doesn't have a second purpose that you could use it for on Shabbos. So now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is also saying that in the next Mishnah, when we say that covers of kalim that are in the ground, that are attached to the ground, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos only if they have a handle. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, besides that they have to have a handle, they have to have Torah's kli aleihem. It has to be that we see that they're a kalim. Again, according to Rashi, that there's another purpose you could use them for. And according to Tosfos, that they've been made into a keli. For example, just the fact they have a handle shows that they've been made into a keli. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan is contradicting himself. V'atanya, we learn in a b'raisa, charoyas shel dekel shegodron l'shem etzim, branches, hard branches of a palm tree, which you chop down off the palm tree to use for firewood, v'nimlach aleihem l'yeshiva, then you changed your mind and decided you want to sit on them, tzorich l'kasher, you have to do a maisa to them to tie them together to show that now they're not firewood and are not mukta anymore. Reb Shimon Gamliel ain't sarach lakasha. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you don't. It's enough that you thought about them. So we see again that now charoyas shel dekel do not have toras kli. They're not multifunction things according to Rashi. I mean they're a natural product anyway. They're not even something that you yourself made. According to Tosfos, they're not, you didn't do any maisa to them to show. Branches. Charoyas means the hard branches of a palm tree. Yeah. They start off soft, then they're the lovim, then as they get hard and the leaves spread apart, then they're called charoyas. Yeah. So again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you don't need it to have Torah's kli. Rabbi Yochanan is saying it does have to have Torah's kli. So how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that? Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel on one detail, that it's enough to have in the case of the bolt, for example, that it's mesukan, that it was designated before Shabbos, even if it wasn't tied to the door, but he disagrees with him on one detail, namely he would say, not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that it needs to have Torah's kli. So fine, I mean, when you have a machlokas tanoim, an amora can't argue with a tana, but an amora is allowed to pick and choose and say, in this particular detail, I hold like this tana, and in that particular detail, I hold like that tana. So okay, that's what he's doing. So in the case of, to say that it doesn't need to be tied, there he holds like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but he does also hold, on the other hand, it does have to have Torah's kli. It does have to have the purpose or the function or the appearance of a keli in order to be able to use it. So the Gemara says, Dorash Reb Yitzchok Napcha Pischa Deresh Galusa Halacha Kerab Eliezer. Reb Yitzchok Napcha gave a drosha in front of the door of the Resh Galusa that the halacha is like Reb Eliezer. So therefore, that would mean in our Mishnah, So that would mean in our Mishnah that, that you can only use this pekaka haloin if it's tied to the wall and it's hanging down and it's hanging and it's not going all the way down to the ground. And the same thing we said on Amud Aleph, the same thing would apply to the nego hanigro, the bolt of the door. In order to be able to use the bolt, it would have to be that the rope that it's hanging from is not long enough for it to reach the floor. Masiv Rab Amram. So Rab Amram says, I have a contradiction. We learn in the last Mishnah of Ar Masechta, you have a story over there involving Abba Shol and involving the father of Rav Tzadik and Abba Shol ben Botnis, where they took an earthenware container and used it to close up a door, to close up a window on Shabbos. We'll learn over there in the Gemara in about a month, Bez Hashem, the details, but the gist of it is that there was tumma in a house next door to them, so they needed to close up the window to prevent the tumma from coming into their house. So we see that they took an earthenware container and used it, and obviously it wasn't tied to the wall before Shabbos, because they didn't know before Shabbos this was going to happen, and they used it to close the window, and the Mishnah says, based on what they did, we can learn that you're allowed to close up a window, and also you're allowed to measure a koshrin and tie a temporary thing on Shabbos, because the Mishnah continues over there that afterward they need to measure whether there's actually a poseach tefach, whether there's an opening of a tefach between their house and the house next door, to know whether the tumah is actually going to spread from the other house to theirs. We'll learn the details at the very end of our Masechta. The point is that we see that you are allowed to close up a window using, like this, in this case, they use an earthenware container. So therefore, and even though it wasn't tied to the wall, so that would mean the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, who says that it needs to be tied, etc. Omalei Abaya my daidach. So Abaya says to Rab Amram, what are you thinking to ask the question? Mishum de katoni stoma, because that's a stam mishnah, and usually the halacha is like a stam mishnah. Negro and nigro nami stomahi. So what? When it comes to the mishnah about negro and nigro, where we said there's a difference between when you're allowed to use it in the Bis Mikdash versus outside the Bis Mikdash, that was also a Stam Mishnah. Okay, we had a Braisa saying that was according to Rabbi Eliezer, but in the Mishnah itself, it was presented as a Stam Mishnah, as the opinion of the Chachamim, and therefore, so what makes you think that the Mishnah at the end of Ar Masechta is any stronger than that one? The Gemara says, nevertheless, the fact that an actual Maisa was done teaches us, in other words, sometimes you can have a Tana or an Amora hold something, but they hold it theoretically, this is how it should be. This is how it comes out to me based on what I analyzed from the Psukim or the Mishnayos or the Brisos or whatever, that it should be this way. But not necessarily that you would actually pask in that way in practice. But we see at the end of the Masechta, the story with Abba Shol ben Botnis and the father of Rav Tzadik, where they actually did something. They actually took this earthenware container and used it to close up the window. That's a much more powerful thing. Therefore, yes, we're going to say that that Mishnah sort of overrides the one about the Negro HaNigro in Erevin, and therefore we're going to say the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So the halacha is after all, like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that you're allowed to use the Pekaka Haloin even if it wasn't hanging, and actually, as we said, even if it wasn't attached at all. With that said, though, the Rif draws a distinction, after all, between the window shade and the neger, and says in the case of the neger, it would need to be tied. And one point is, Mefoshim explained, the difference is because with the window shade, okay, you're adding something to the side of the house, but fine, it's clearly only temporary. But when it comes to the neger, it goes into a hole in the ground. That looks much more like boina. When you're putting it into a hole in the ground, it looks much more like building. So therefore, you need a stronger thing. You need it to actually be attached in order. You need it to actually be attached in order to be able to use it. So in that case, then it comes out according to the Rif, and he may have had a different girsa in our Gemara over here, because it comes out over here. Well, not necessarily a different girsa. We're talking all over here according to Rabbi Yochanan. In Erevin, Shmuel says over there, Tosfos refers to it on Amud Aleph, that Shmuel says the halacha is actually that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, so it would need to be tied. So the Rif actually says, there's a distinction then between the window shade and the neger, where the window shade doesn't need to be tied at all, like we're saying in Or Gemara over here, but the bolt, if you're going to stick it into a hole in the ground by the door, that would need to be tied on in order to be able to use it. Because again, sticking it into a hole in the ground looks much more like boina than sticking a window shade into a window. If it has hindrance, If it has hinges, if it's attached, then we're not talking about. Then for sure you're allowed to open and close it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about where it doesn't have hinges and you just you have to pick it up and stick it into the window. Right. Right. Yeah. So again, the halacha is that in that case you don't. On the other hand, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, if it's the kind of window that you're opening very infrequently, then not. If it's the kind of thing you're going to close the window and then you might open it up a month later or something, then your taka wouldn't be allowed to, because then that can't be called binyan arai anymore. That's more of a permanent binyan. Okay. The Mishnah says, kol kisuya kelim sheyesh lahem beis achiza. All cover all lids of kelim that have a handle, nitol and b'shabbos, are allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Yosi b'medvarim amorim. Rabbi Yosi says, when is this talking about b'kisui karkos? This is specifically talking about covers for kelim. This is talking about coverings for things on the ground. Meaning, for example, Rashi says, let's say a burr or a dus. The difference is, as we learned yesterday, a burr is dug underground. The top of the burr is level with the ground. A dus is similar. It's also used for storing water, but it's built above ground. So either way, those kinds of things, if you have a cover for them, then we're saying that it would have to have a handle in order to be moved on Shabbos. Aval b'kisuya kelim, but when it comes to a cover of kelim, Then, whether they have a handle or not, you would be allowed to move them on Shabbos. So we learned this yesterday, and now we're going to talk about that. So Amar of Yehuda bar Shila, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechanan, Vuhu sheyesh toras kli alein. Again, we need in order to move that cover. It doesn't if it doesn't have a handle. There's two ways of understanding what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Is he saying that even in the case of the ones that have a handle, we're saying it also needs to have Toras Kli Alein? Or does he mean that if it doesn't have a handle, then at least it needs to have Toras Kli in order to move it? Well, for example, let's say, so Toras Kli, again, Rashi had said before that it means it has another function. Besides that it serves for covering the keli, it also serves, for example, to sit on, let's say. According to Tosafos, it doesn't need that. It just means that you did something to it, you did a maisa to it to demonstrate that it's being used as a cover. Anyway, the point is, Rashi had said, when it's karka, then the problem is, when you put the cover on, then it really does look like bona, unless it has a handle, then the handle demonstrates you're not putting it there long-term, because it has a handle, so chose it can easily be taken off. I saw, by the way, an interesting question. What about, for example, let's say nowadays you have a pool, let's say a pool or a mikveh or whatever, and you put a tarp over it. Would you be allowed to take off that tarp on Shabbos? It doesn't have a handle necessarily. So I saw there were contemporary poskim who disagree on that, whether you'd be allowed to on Shabbos or not. Okay. Anyway. So v'hush yesh toras kli alein, only if they have a toras kli, then you're allowed to move them. So, in other words, Rashi is saying, if it's just a cover of a keli, but if it's just a cover of a keli, but it doesn't have a handle, and it doesn't have toras kli, then you wouldn't be allowed to move it. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Dekule alma kisei karkois." Now, when we have the machloikas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosi in our Mishnah, it goes like this. If we're talking about a covering of an actual building that's on the ground, like a bur or a dus, like we just said, then for sure, im yesh lahan beis achiza eini loy loy. Then only if they have a handle are you allowed to move the cover on Shabbos. And if not, then not, because otherwise, if it doesn't have a handle, then it really does look like boina and soiser when you're putting it on the pit or taking it off. And on the other hand, kisuya kelim, when it comes to lids of kelim, afagav de ein lahem beis achiza, even if they don't have a handle, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosi would agree that you're mutter to use it, because after all, again, we said that it does have toras kli, it does have, as Rabbi Yochanan said, a function or a purpose of a keli. So therefore, sure, you're allowed to move it even if it doesn't have a handle, because it's a cover of a keli. There's no issue of binyan, and the issue of mukta is taken care of by the fact that it has toras kli. Ki pligi b'kelim d'chabrinu ba'ara. The machloikus would be regarding kelim that are attached to the ground. So let's say, for example, you take an earthenware jug or something, and you cement it to the ground. Or like, for example, actually, we were talking the other day about an oven, where an earthenware oven made out of clay is usually cemented to the ground. So that kind of thing, if it has a cover, marsova gazrinin or marsova la gazrinin. So now the Chachamim and Amish now are going to say that you're going to be goyzer. because it might be confused with the actual ground itself, and therefore you're not going to be allowed to. Or Marsava, like Azrin and Where's Rabbi Yossi would say that we're not gozer and you're allowed to cover, and you're allowed to cover it. Lishnachrina, another version of it goes, Kipligi b'kisri taner. They're arguing specifically about the lid of an oven. Ma'amidami l'kisri karko, ma'amidami l'kisri kelim, where the chachamim would compare it to a covering of something in the karka, because after all, it is attached to the ground. Therefore, they would say it has to have a handle. And Rabbi Yossi would say, after all, a taner is an oven as a keli. Therefore, it doesn't need to have a handle. Therefore, it doesn't need to have a handle in order to be able to move it on Shabbos. So we said yesterday that Rabbi Yossi had said, Rabbi Yossi had brought in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that you're allowed to move a cover of an oven even if it doesn't have a handle. So that fits with what we're saying over here in the Gemara in the Lishna Achrina. With that said, though, actually there are Rishonim who learn that there may be a difference between. An oven. There are some Rishonim don't have the Lishna Achrina over here, and they say there would be a difference between an oven, which after all sticks up above the ground completely. You usually have it's standing on the ground and is cemented to the ground, and the whole thing is standing above ground. Versus, for example, a keli where most of it is buried in the ground and only the top of it sticks out above the ground. So you can have, for example, again, you can take, let's say, clay jars or whatever, and you bury them mostly in the ground, and you just have the top of them is sticking out. So we, according to those who showed him, we would say, I think the Rif, for example, says this way, that if the oven is sticking up above the ground that completely, then sure, you can cover it on Shabbos. You can cover it on Shabbos and uncover it using the lid, even if the lid doesn't have a handle. But if the keli is more buried in the ground, then you would need then it would be different, and then it would have to have a handle. Okay, Hadron alach kol hakelim. So now we're going to continue on the topic of muktzah, but we're also going to deal with a related topic, which is tircha on Shabbos. Sometimes, even when you have something that in and of itself is not muktzah, the chachamim don't want you to be doing extra tircha on Shabbos. So that's going to be the subject of our perek then, of the kinds of tircha that you're allowed and not allowed to do on Shabbos, and it sort of intersects with the dinim of muktzah, because if the thing is muktzah, then you can't handle it anyway, even if there's less tircha involved. So the Mishnah says, mefanin. You're allowed to clear away if, let's say, for example, so you have, let's say, a storehouse where you have grain or whatever stored, and you want to clear a space away in it. So you want to clear away a space. Let's say, for example, because you have guests and you need room for your guests for a Shabbos meal, or you need room for them to sleep or whatever, So you're allowed mefanin afila abach v'chamish kupas shel tevin v'shel tefuah. You're allowed to clear away even four or five baskets full of straw or of grain, and we'll see in the Gemara why we say four or five, mipnei orchim, because of guests, if you need room for guests, or mipnei bitul beis hamedrash, or to prevent the beis hamedrash from being bitul, meaning you're going to be hosting a shiur over there, people are going to be coming to learn Torah over there, and they're not going to be able to because there's not enough room, so you're allowed to clear out part of your storehouse in order to make room for them. On Shabbos, we're saying, obviously, if it was before Shabbos, of course, you're allowed to do whatever you want. Right, so there we were saying that we were talking about, for example, you had bricks, or we had different versions over there, you had bricks or beams or whatever that they said to lay them out before Shabbos. Right, over here what we're talking about is, let's say you have a storehouse where you have a lot of straw or a lot of grain stored. So you want to clear out an area in it in order that your orchim will have a place to eat and sleep, or in order that the talmidim will be able to have a place to sit and learn. So you're allowed to do that, even four or five baskets full. Avaloya sa'otzer, but not the storehouse. Now, what does that mean? We'll see in the Gemara that what it means is you're not allowed to. We'll see in the Gemara two different understandings of what avaloya sa'otzer means. So you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. How big? But Tosfos mentions, by the way, that the Yerushalmi says that the korpos, the baskets we're talking about over here, would be the size that are three saw. Three saw is about 50 pounds, so we're talking about pretty substantial size baskets. Other Rishonim say, very okay, the Yerushalmi may say that, doesn't necessarily mean that our Gemara agrees with that. Our Gemara might say, or the Bavli might say that even if they're larger than that, it's allowed. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Mefanin truma tahora. By the way, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, but Amal mentions an interesting point. For this purpose, And maybe b'chlal, for when we say achnosas orchim, it doesn't mean if you invite your friend over to eat by you on Shabbos. It means you're talking about people who are from out of town, so they're staying overnight by you, or by other people and eating by you, whatever. Those are the kind of orchim that we're talking about where you'd be allowed to clear a space for them. But if you just have, you're inviting your friend over from the next block over to eat with you on Shabbos, then you don't have any such a tater. Okay. Yeah. So, mefanin truma tahora, you're allowed to clear away truma tahora. What kind of, in other words, what kind of things? When we say that you're allowed to clear away, baskets of wheat or grain or whatever, would be, for example, if that grain is truma tahora, because after all, you could, even if it's grain, fine, you can't eat it raw on Shabbos, but you could feed it to, the kohen could feed it to his animal. So Rashi says, if it was truma tahora, if it was truma tmeya rather, then not. Because now Rashi learns like this. In many places in Shas, Rashi learns that truma tmeya, you're allowed to destroy any way you want. You don't dafka have to burn it. You could, for example, feed it to an animal. However, over here, since feeding it to an animal when it's tamei would be accomplishing the mitzvah of getting rid of truma tmeya, then you taka wouldn't be allowed to do that on Shabbos. Because you're not allowed, we learned earlier in the Masechta, you're not allowed to do the mitzvah of Biur Kodshim on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So Rashi learns, therefore, that you wouldn't be able to give the Truma Tmeya to an animal or a dog or some other kind of animal. Tosfos and other Rishonim in a number of places disagree with that and say that actually, no, when we say you have to get rid of Truma Tmeya, it means you have to burn it unless it's impossible to burn it. For example, it's liquids. So anyway, you can't feed it to an animal. The only exception also to that is if the truma tmeya is chametz and it's Erev Pesach, then you're allowed to get rid of it by feeding it to an animal. But otherwise, the mitzvah is to burn it. So for that reason alone, you can't feed it to an animal. Nothing to do with Shabbos. Tosfos would learn that even on weekdays you can't. Anyway, but here we're talking truma tahora, you're allowed to. Udmai, you're also allowed to move on Shabbos Dmai. And we're going to see, the Gemara is going to go eventually, and the Gemara is going to eventually go. We'll learn over Shabbos, Bez Hashem. On Shabbos and on Sunday, on Kuf Chav Zayin and Kuf Chav Ches, we'll talk about what the Chiddush is with each one of these things in the Mishnah. I mean, obviously, for example, Truma Tahora, you're allowed to eat, so what's the Chiddush in it? Dmai, that actually the question is the other way around. You're not allowed to eat Dmai unless you take out the Maiser from it, so why are you allowed to move it on Shabbos? So we're going to go through them one by one. So you're also allowed to move grain that is Maiser Rishon where the Trumas Maiser was taken out. And again, the Gemara is going to ask, once, what's the Chiddush? Of course, once the Trumas Maiser was taken out, then it's considered like any other Cholin. Maiser Sheni veHekdesh Sheniftu, Maiser Sheni or Hekdesh that were redeemed, where you paid the Keren and the Choymesh if necessary for it. And again, the Gemara is going to ask what the Chiddush is. VaTurmus HaYavesh, you're also allowed to move on Shabbos baskets of dry turmus. Turmus is a type of beans. Now, these turmus beans are very bitter. You can't eat them. You have to cook them many times. The Gemara mentions in some places, you have to cook them many times in order to eat them, but you can't cook on Shabbos. Nevertheless, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, because it's food for goats. In other words, goats will eat it, and it's very common for people to have goats. So therefore, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos because it's food for them. On the side here, it brings a different gear, so not la'izim, but la'aniyim, for poor people, meaning in a pinch, even though turmus are very bitter, in a pinch, a poor person would eat them. Avaloyas a tevel, but you're not allowed to move away on Shabbos baskets of tevel, because tevel is muktzah, because you can't eat it. Tevel is food that you haven't taken truma and maisa from yet. So again, the Gemara is going to end up asking, any food that grew in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara is going to ask, obviously, I mean, tevel is muktzah because you can't eat it on Shabbos without taking truma and maisa, and you're not allowed to take truma and maisa on Shabbos. So what's the chiddush? So we'll learn that in the Gemara. No, there's no trick that you can do for it now. So not tevel. V'loyas ma'isurishin shalinit truma. So you wouldn't be able to move on Shabbos ma'isurishin where the truma wasn't taken off because it's tevel. The levi is not allowed to eat it until he takes out the truma. And again, we'll see in the Gemara what the exact case is. V'loyas ma'isusheni v'hekdesh shalinifdu. Not ma'isusheni outside Yerushalayim, that is, or hekdesh that were not redeemed, because ma'isusheni outside Yerushalayim you're not allowed to eat, and hekdesh you're not allowed to do anything with until you'd be doing me'ila, until you buy it back. The lawyers are luf. Also, you're not allowed to. Move on Shabbos luf. Rashi over here explains that luf is a type of beans. It's not edible when it's raw, even by animals. The Rambam learns a little differently, that it's actually not a kind of beans, but a kind of onions. Whatever it is, it's very, very bitter or very sour or whatever, and it needs to be cooked. And unless it's cooked, it's not even edible by animals. So therefore, you can't. The loyas achardol, and also not mustard. What we mean is unground up mustard seeds. Because again, how can you use them? Only if you grind them up, and you can't grind on Shabbos. The pastures animals wouldn't eat it. Reb Shimon Gamliel matur beluf. Now, on the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says you are allowed to move luf on Shabbos. Because it's food for ravens. So we're going to see in the Gemara. In other words, the point is that rich people keep ravens as pets. Reb Shimon Gamliel is one of the Tanoim who holds, like we had Reb Shimon ben Yochai earlier in the Masechta, who said, "Kol Yisrael b'nei Melachim." All the Jewish people are like kings, and whatever is allowed for kings is allowed for regular Jews. So therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that all Jews are roy to have pet ravens, and therefore ravens will eat luf. So therefore, you're allowed to have it. So Tosfos points out, therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel would say all the more so would be in the case of mustard that you would be allowed to, because mustard, there's even more creatures that will eat it even before it's ground up. Yeah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Chavile kash v'chavile etzim v'chavile zrodim, bundles of straw or wood or zrodim, which are kind of soft branches, which when they're soft, when they're young, then you're able to eat them. Animals at least are able to eat them. If he designated them to use for animal food, and here some of the Mephoshim say it means even if you could even designate them on Shabbos itself, then you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. And if not, then you can't move them because then they're meant for firewood and you can't use firewood on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. If you're telling me that you're even allowed to move five baskets, arba meboya, does it need to say four? Why did the Mishnah use the expression arba v'chomesh kupas? Amar of Chista, it means arba mechomesh, it means four out of five. If you had only five baskets worth, then you're only allowed to clear out four. You're not allowed to clear out the whole storehouse because as the Gemara is going to say soon, the problem is that there might be holes in the ground. And in fact, Mephoshim pointed out, it's very common to have holes in the ground in a storehouse because you have bugs and rodents and whatever that crawl around in there and make holes in the ground. So you might notice holes in the ground and smooth them out, and that would be an issur b'na on Shabbos. So therefore, you're not allowed to clear out the whole thing. Another version, or actually, you have it's in parenthesis over here because there's different gear size over here. But another version is it means four if it's a small storehouse and five if it's a large storehouse. In other words, according to the Gusa, the way we have it over here with the parenthesis, it would mean that even if it's an Otzer Gadol, the maximum you could take out would be five. According to the other version, it would mean that if, let's say, you had an Otzer that had, let's say, 10 baskets full, then you'd be able to take out nine, let's say. Anyway, v'chomesh ma'otzer gadol, five. So when the Mishnah says four or five, it means if it's a small storehouse, the maximum you can take out is four, because you can't take out the fifth one. And if it's a large one, the maximum you can take out is five, and then you have to stop because otherwise it'll be too much tircha for Shabbos. Umay abaloyas ha'otzer, what does the Mishnah mean when it says, but not the otzer? It means shelo yascha ba'otzer tchila. Meaning that if you didn't start using anything from the storehouse before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to move anything. If you didn't use anything from it for yourself or your animals to eat from before Shabbos, then you would not be allowed to do it because it would be mukta. And then, umani, Rabbi Yehuda, he islay mukta. So our Mishnah, therefore, would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, who has a very broad conception of mukta, as we've learned before in the Masechta. Rabbi Yehuda would say, unless you showed before Shabbos that you plan to use the stuff in the storehouse, that, for example, by using some of it, then you're not allowed to. So in this case, if you didn't start, then you're not allowed to. So Rabbi Yehuda, so therefore, according to Rabbi Chista, that's what the Mishnah means. If you didn't at all use anything from the storehouse before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to move anything out of it. If you started before Shabbos, so now the items in it are not mukta, then fine, you're allowed to take four baskets full if it's a small one, or five baskets full if it's a large one. No more than that. And so, number one, you can't clear out the oitzer completely. But number two, you also can't start on it fresh if you never used anything from it before. You can use it for Michael Behemoth, that's fine. You can use it for animal food, but it has to be that you used it for something before Shabbos, according to Rav Chisda. Okay.
But it has to be something that you can't use yourself.
No, Michael Behemoth could be something. No, for certain purposes, as far as Shemitah, for example, we say that food that you can eat yourself, you can't feed to animals. But when it comes to regular Hilchos Shabbos, we don't say that. You can have, let's say, for example, an apple you yourself can eat, but you can also feed it to a horse on Shabbos. So how you milk cows, I mean, that's not relevant to our Gemara over here, but the answer is you're allowed to because of tzar balachayim. The milk has to go to waste. What you do is you milk it onto the ground, or you milk it into a pail full of soap or whatever. Okay. All right. Onward. Okay. So again, according to Rav Chisda, the Mishnah is telling us two dinim. Number one, you're not allowed to clear out the whole oitzer because of the problem that there's going to be holes in the ground and you might fill them in. Number two, if you never used anything from this oitzer before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to move anything at all. And if you're allowed to move, then the maximum you're allowed to move is four. If there's five baskets worth, then you can move four. And if there's five or more, then you can only move five. So you can, the maximum you can move is five, right? Because we don't want you to do too much tircha on Shabbos, right? Okay. Or Shmuel Amar Abba B'chamesh Kedah Amri Inchi. No, Shmuel says that's not what it means. When it says in the Mishnah four or five, it just means like the way people use four or five as larger numbers, as just indefinite numbers. V'iboy, I feel a tova nami mefanin. If you need to, you can clear even more than four or five. Or my avaloya sa'otzer. So what does the Mishnah mean? When it says avaloya sa'otzer, it means shalo yigma kula. Regardless, you're not allowed to finish off. You're not allowed to take everything out of the oitzer. And the reason is Dilma Osilash Vuya Gumus, because you might come to smooth out holes in the ground. Now there's two ways of looking at it, by the way. One way of looking at it is when we say you're not clearing out the whole oitzer, so does that mean you're still leaving a layer of straw or a layer of grain on the ground, and just the orchim or whatever are going to sit or stand on that? Or does it mean that even you're allowed to clear some parts of the oitzer all the way down to the ground, but not all of it? And the idea is, there's an explanation, I think the Ran says, because if you empty out the whole oitzer, then you're likely to go smooth out the holes in the ground. But if you only empty out part of it, so you have bare ground in some places, but not in others, then you're not likely to do that. Then you're not likely to bother smoothing out the holes in the part that you see. You're just going to wait until the whole thing is empty. No, we're talking about in the oitzer. We're talking about in the storehouse. You don't want to have holes in the ground there, but inevitably you have mice and other kinds of vermin or whatever make holes in the ground over there. So we're concerned you may smooth out those holes. So now, if you empty out the whole oitzer, then you have a problem. If you only empty out part of the oitzer, then you're not going to have that problem. So again, one way of looking at it is, and I think the Ran says that what it means is, even if let's say you have the whole oitzer is here. So you start clearing out this part of it. You have four or five baskets or whatever, and you've cleared out this whole part all the way down to the ground. That's not a problem, because even if you notice holes in the ground over here, you're not going to bother filling them in now. You'll wait until the whole oitzer is cleared out, and then you'll do that all at once. But if you clear out the whole oitzer, then you have the problem. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it would be that you'd still have to leave a layer of straw or a layer of grain on the ground over there. So you clear out four or five. So now you have it. It's not all the way up to the ceiling. Now you just have a thin layer of it on the ground, but then, yeah. Okay. So you're not allowed to clear out the whole oitzer, Shmuel says. That's what the Mishnah means. You're not allowed to clear out the whole oitzer. And the reason is, because you might come to smooth out holes in the ground. But you are allowed to begin, even if you never used anything in the oitzer before. You're allowed to start using it on Shabbos. So therefore, Shmuel would say, our Mishnah therefore goes according to Reb Shimon, who does not have such a broad concept of mukta. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. I want to go a little bit ahead, only because the next couple of blot are a little bit large, so. You're not allowed to start out to begin with the oitzer, which we said is according to the Yehuda. But you're allowed to make a path through the oitzer, through the grain or the straw over there, in order you can go in and out. Now, what do you mean oitzer by shvil? The Gemara says, what do you mean you make a path? You just said you're not allowed to begin using it, so you're not allowed to move anything in it. It's all mukta. The answer is Hachi Kamar, right? But what it means is Oisav Shvil Biraglav Viknisase Vitiase means as you're going in and out, you can move things this way or that way with your feet in order to make a path. Right, like with snow, I guess. Yeah. Because the point is, it's called tiltul min hatsad. It's not directly handling the muktzah with your hands. It's kicking it with your feet, and that would be allowed. In fact, most poskim say that means in general, you're always allowed to move muktzah with other parts of your body, even if you're doing it only for the sake of moving the muktzah, like you're doing in this case. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish wants to say, fakert, in our Gemara, we're saying over here, you know why you're allowed to make the shvil is because you're walking through, implying that when it comes to moving muktzah, if you're kicking it aside, for example, because it's in your way, then fine, you'd be allowed to do that. But if you're kicking it aside, because, for example, let's say it's in a place where it's going to get ruined and you want to move it out of the way, with what we learned in the previous parak, mechamal otzel, then maybe not even. You can't even kick it, even though you're not moving it with your hands, because you're not doing it. Or sorry, the Chazon Ish says if you're doing it while you're doing something else, not for another purpose. Sorry, while you're walking over here, you're kicking the mukta aside. Like you said, while you're walking, you're kicking away the snow. That's fine. But not that you're intending to do it deliberately in order to kick the mukta aside. The Chazon Ish wants to say that not. Most other Achronim disagree with him, though. Tana Rabbanan, Tvua Tzvura, if you have heaped up grain, Bizman Shehischol Me'erev Shabbos, if you started using that grain before Shabbos, Mutar Le'Stapik Me'erev Shabbos, then you're allowed to use more of that grain on Shabbos, Ve'im Lav also Le'Stapik Me'erev Shabbos, if not, then you're not allowed to, Divrei Reb Shimon, Reb Acha Matir, Reb Acha says it's Mutar. And one says it's backwards. Klapi Laya. It seems to be backwards. Reb Shimon is usually the one who's makel and muktzah. Why all of a sudden is he machmer? You see, right? Ela Ema Divrei Reb Acha v'Reb Shimon Mati. You're right. You have to flip it around. Reb Acha would say it's osur because he holds like Reb Yehuda. Reb Shimon would say it's mutter because he holds that you don't have that much of muktzah. Tana Kamashir Tvua Tzvura. What is the amount of Tvua that's heaped up that we're talking about that you would have to, that we're talking about that you'd have to have used some of it before Shabbos, so it's not Muktzah? Lesech. The amount would be a Lesech, which is a half a Kur. Less than that, in other words, Rashi says it's not considered an Oitzer. It's not considered Bechlal, a storehouse that you should have any restrictions on moving it on Shabbos. An interesting point that one of the Mephoshim makes on this is that given we said that Tosfos learns that I think Rabbi Hananel seems to mention it over here, that given what Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi, that the baskets we're talking about over here are three saw, and we said you can move four or five of them, well, five baskets of three saw comes out to 15 saw. So that's what we're saying. The minimum size to be considered an oitzer would be five baskets worth of three saw. Okay. And the Gemara finishes off. What is the amount that's considered an oitzer? So Abaya quotes him the braisa that we just said that the minimum amount is a lesach, is a half a kur. If it's less than that, then it's not considered an oitzer, and there's no particular restrictions on moving things aside on Shabbos in order to make room for orchim or whatever. So that's only according to Reb Yehuda or Reb Acha, is that necessary? According to Reb Shimon, it's not. According to Reb Shimon, even if you never used anything from this Oitzer before Shabbos, you're allowed to move things from it out, you're allowed to move from it on Shabbos, because Reb Shimon doesn't hold it's considered Muktzah for the fact that you didn't use it before. But what we're saying is, there's a minimum amount of grain that has to be stored in one place for it to even be considered an Oitzer in the first place. If you have less than a Lesach, less than a half a kor of grain or straw or whatever, then it's not even considered an Oitzer, and there's no particular restrictions on moving any of it for Shabbos. If it's an Oitzer, then we have the rules in our Mishnah that you can move it aside. Again, according to Rav Chista, the maximum you can ever move is five baskets full, no more than that. And if the Oitzer is only five, then you can only move four. According to Shmuel, what it means is you're allowed to move as many baskets as you want. Four or five doesn't davka mean four or five. It means as many as you want, as long as you don't clear out the whole oitzer, because then you're going to have the problem. You're going to see holes in the ground and fill them in. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and we're going to have also a lot of interesting agadda on the subject of achnasas orchim, because our Mishnah is mentioning that you're allowed to move these baskets of straw or whatever for achnasas orchim. So that's going to lead us into a discussion of the mitzvah of achnasas orchim on Shabbos itself. On Shabbos itself, yeah. Okay, ish kayach.